It hit.
Mr. Is it pronounced Cease?
Cease, yes, Your Honor.
Proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Matthew Cease, and I represent the estates of Nell and Gary Pepper in this matter. Today we ask this court to reverse the district court and hold specifically that there was no conditional gift of Gary Pepper's Elvis Presley collection memorabilia to Nancy Whitehead. We ask that the court make that determination for two reasons. First, the defendants have failed to prove that Gary Pepper had the necessary and requisite donative intent to establish a gift of any sort, let alone a conditional gift. Second, we ask that the court to determine that the defendants have not produced any evidence to establish what conditions Gary placed on the transfer of the property to Nancy Whitehead. And because of that, a conditional gift must fail. At the outset, I think it's extremely important to note the burden of proof in this case. The burden to prove conditional gift requires the defendants to prove by clear, convincing, and satisfactory evidence that Gary Pepper intended there to be a conditional gift of the memorabilia to Nancy.
It does have "and satisfactory" in Iowa law?
It is.
Clear, convincing, and then they put satisfactory?
Yeah, it is, Your Honor. I can't remember the exact case, but it says and some cases say satisfactory. So that's the term of art in Iowa. But in this case, the defendants not only didn't meet that burden, the jury should never have gotten to that decision in the first place because the district court failed in not granting our judgment as a matter of law on that issue. In order to prove a gift of any sort, there has to be donative intent to create a gift, there has to be delivery, and there has to be acceptance. Where this case fails is that there was no donative intent on behalf of Gary Pepper in order to establish a gift of any kind.
The jury given an option of finding an outright gift?
No, they were not, Your Honor. The only instruction provided to the jury was conditional gift. They were given no option at all to find a regular inter vivos gift at all. And I think that's an important thing when looking at this and whether or not the judge should have granted a judgment as a matter of law on conditional gift, because the only thing presented to the jury was a conditional gift. An outright inter vivos gift was never presented to the jury.
Why is that? Was it sought by the...
It was not sought by...
Right, so they decided not to seek it, but the evidence might have supported it.
But that wasn't a question for the jury to decide.
No, but I don't understand why it follows that since they didn't seek that instruction, they lose on conditional.
Well, it's like they weren't requesting that to be presented to the jury at all, and we have to look at what the jury was presented with. But I don't think it matters either way, Your Honor, because there wasn't donative intent, because Nancy was specifically asked if she ever felt like this was a gift to her, and she said no. And there was no evidence in the record to contradict that. So that by itself is an admission by a party opponent saying that I never determined it to be a gift.
Well, now
an admission. I mean, that's her and her point of view.
What's that, Your Honor?
Is there a distinction between her perception and the donor's intent?
Well, there may be if there was evidence to contradict that there was evidence that Gary ever wanted there to be a gift, but there wasn't. The only evidence presented, the only testimony that there existed between the parties, between Gary Pepper and Nancy, was Nancy's testimony. And the donee of that property determines that she doesn't believe it a gift when she's got every motive in the world.
Well, she believes it's kind of a gift, though. You're not quite being fair. You know, I know she says keep it.
She says keep it, but then when asked what she thought keep it meant, it was watch over the property. And that is a clearly established abatement. There, in order for,
quote, until he wanted it back, unquote.
Well, she never said until he wanted it back.
Well, where's my quotation from? I thought that was from her. Sorry.
No.
Who said, quote, until he wanted it back?
That I think that's the illustration from the restatement second, where there's the illustration talking about a watch, a person giving the watch and saying, you can use the watch.
Can't resist asking, is there any case where Iowa has adopted the restatement? In Missouri, we make a fetish of saying we're adopting this part of the restatement, not that part, we're ignoring another part, et cetera, et cetera.
I am not aware of any Iowa cases that have adopted either the second restatement that that the defendants have asked or the third restatement that I've asked. But the only reason I cite the third restatement is to further prove that donative intent and an intent to transfer the ownership and title of the property by Gary Pepper must happen at the time of delivery. And that's the key operative thing that needs to happen. And in that watch example, you can say that the owner of the watch intended to transfer his title to the proper of the watch to the other person until he asked for it back. So when that watch is in that other person's property, it's his property until that other person asks for it back. The only thing that was presented in this case was Nancy said, Gary said, keep it. And when asked what she thought keep it meant, she thought it was her responsibility to watch over the property. And that's a bailment. And that's a key legal distinction because a bailment does not transfer legal title in the property to the bailee. Instead,
what did Nancy say she thought was her responsibility after Gary died?
She said that she felt that she was entrusted to continue to watch over the property, and she owned the responsibility of taking care of it. That's what her exact words were, Your Honor, is that she owned the responsibility to take care of it. And when asked, Nancy, did you ever believe that you owned this collection? She specifically said, no, it was Gary's. And when asked if she believed that she owned the collection when Gary was alive in California, no, it was Gary's. That by itself shows that there was no ownership interest in Nancy had no ownership interest at all in the collection. Admittedly so. And that's what I get at, that's an admission by her that there was no gift. And it's pages 105 of the record where she specifically says, and you believe that it was your job to just watch over those items. Is that correct? That's correct. You didn't believe you owned any of the items. Is that correct? As long as Gary was alive, I was keeping it for him.
Well, there's a qualifier there.
I was keeping it for him?
No, as long as he was alive.
As long as he was alive. Yeah. But that doesn't matter, Your Honor, because as it is a conditional gift, if she doesn't own it, there can be no gift.
Well, where did she say she didn't own it? You just quoted, you didn't believe you owned any of these items, and she says, as long as Gary was alive, I was keeping it for him. That's not a statement, that's not a declaration that she didn't own it after he was deceased. And then the red brief quotes this later statement of hers, I believe I owned the responsibility for the collection after he passed away.
If you look at the appendix page 106, Your Honor, I asked her, the entire time Gary was alive in California, you never believed that any of the items listed in Exhibit 1 that we looked at earlier were yours, not while he was alive. And so that's the determination that she never exerted any sort of ownership interest in the property while Gary was alive. And that's when, if a gift occurred, it has to have happened while Gary was alive, because he can't give a gift after he's dead unless that's...
In the watch hypothetical, would the witness typically say, I believe I owned it while the donor was alive?
Absolutely. They have to believe that in order for it to be gift. It's like a life estate, Your Honor, that if...
No, I mean, they're holding it until the person wants it back.
But it's...
The donor wants it back, but if the donor dies, then they get to keep it. So now the donor's alive, and I ask you, do you own that watch? You're not going to say yes. You're going to say no. I'm holding it until the guy wants it back.
Your Honor, I don't agree with that at all. I think that...
What do you think you're going to say if I say, do you own the watch?
Until you ask for it back, yes, I own the watch. I can do with it whatever I want.
Own the watch until I ask for it back.
Until you ask for it back. And you transfer title. And that's the key distinction between a gift and an abatement. There has to be that key distinction in a title and an ownership interest in the property. And that's where I get at with an example of a life estate. I can give my child interest in, or I can give my wife an interest in my house. But at the time of her death, it reverts to my son. And at the time, or at the time of her death, it goes to my son. And that's the key distinction. During my wife's time period, she has title and interest in it to the extent that she has it for her existence of her life. And the same scenario with the watch. The person that has possession of that watch has interest and title in it and can do with whatever they want to it and transfer that only to the extent that the actual owner ever comes back and asks for it. And that's the key distinction that we need to make between a gift and an abatement. And legally, there has to be that difference. And I want to move on to the second issue of this case, and it's whether or not there was actually ever any expressed conditions that were placed on the gift. And again, Nancy specifically testified that there was no instructions to Gary from Gary other than keep it. And as I cited in my brief, in my opening brief, the Amger second on gifts says that whether a gift is conditional or absolute is a question of the donor's intent to be determined from any express declaration by the donor at the time of making the gift or from the circumstances. So there needs to be an express declaration that is established. And Nancy says that there was no express.
Does the Iowa Supreme Court regularly use Amger? That's what you're referring to, right?
I believe that they do, okay, Your Honor, on a semi-regular basis as it comes up. But again, Nancy was specifically asked in page 105 of the record, again, so there was no instruction for you when it would become yours at any time. No. And again, I think that points to two things. One, that she never had the necessary donative intent. And two, that Gary never had the necessary donative intent to create a gift because she's not exerting any ownership interest in it. And there's no instructions in which Gary would, or in which Nancy would obtain an ownership interest in the future. At this time, I'd like to reserve the rest of this for rebuttal unless there's further questions.
Very well.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Lyford, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Dick Lyford, and I represent the Pease Family Partnership and Nancy Pease Whitehead. I think, answer your question, Judge Colleton, this was submitted on a claim of conversion. So the plaintiff had the burden of proof to show that the property was converted in the first instance. The way the jury was instructed, they got asked the affirmative defense of conditional gift first. So they never reached the issue of whether or not there was a conversion in the first place. But they had to prove, the plaintiffs had to prove, that there was a conversion, and that, I thought, included whether or not a gift had been made. And if I could show there was a gift, then there was no conversion. So that was how, I think, unconditional gift, if you were, was submitted to the jury in this situation. They never got to it.
You mean it wasn't submitted as an affirmative defense? Like conditional gift was submitted as an affirmative defense?
That's correct. They had to prove conversion, plaintiff does, to get to succeed. I have to show an affirmative defense of conditional gift.
When it comes to outright gift, that's not an affirmative defense. That would have just been a defense.
That would have been part of the conversion. If I could show, in fact, there was a gift made, then there would not have been a conversion. That's the way I looked at it, the way this was done. Whether it was or not.
But there wasn't
sure.
An affirmative, you're calling it an affirmative defense instruction on an outright gift.
There was not, Your Honor. And the jury answered the second question. They asked first, was there an abandonment? They said no. They asked second, was there a conditional gift? They answered yes. So they never got to any of the other questions on the verdict form, including the one that we came here about last time, the statute of limitations. I think there's plenty of evidence that this was a conditional gift. The quotes we're talking about, the one I like, I guess, if we're picking on pages 105 to 107, is Nancy at 107. And said, Gary told me to keep it. He made it quite clear to me that he did not want his relatives in California to be entrusted with it. And that leaves, I think, by the process of elimination, a gift to Nancy, conditional as it may be. I think she sort of imposed these conditions on it herself, but nevertheless, they're there from her testimony. But I think there's enough to submit to the jury whether or not, in fact, there was a gift made conditionally here. Judge Gritzner, in his opinion, denying the motions that we're here about today, assumed and gave the benefit of the doubt about whether or not the plaintiffs knew about this collection to them. He did not give us the benefit of that. And I think if one looks at that issue, whether or not the plaintiffs knew about this collection, it solves a lot of the issues Mr. Cease raises. First of all, in the original amended complaint they filed, they state Mr. Tate traveled to Gary Pepper's former home in Memphis, Tennessee to pack up Gary's remaining items, but found the home was empty. And then at the start of this lawsuit, he gave an affidavit that says, I know the decedent believed he still possessed the collection because he told me shortly before he passed away. And almost contemporaneously with that is the obituary that appears in the Memphis newspaper. That is, several days after his death, this obituary appears where Mr. Tate is quoted about Gary Pepper, and then, unfortunately, no quotation marks, but it says that he had an extensive collection.
Does the record reflect who wrote the obituary?
No, Your Honor. Unfortunately, it was 30 years ago, and I could not go back and find that.
The record doesn't reflect who wrote the obituary.
No, sir, but I would think, and a jury could find, that there wasn't a lot of sources for this obituary, that one source may have done it all rather than somebody looking otherwise. And then I took his deposition, and for 3 pages I tried to get him to answer the question whether or not he knew about this collection. And finally he says, not to my memory. And that is where we're at on this. Now, it's important. I was trying to prove, of course, if the statute of limitations defense came up, they would have to prove they didn't know it. I'm trying to prove they did, so that would show that the statute of limitations would apply. The discovery rule wouldn't save them. But it goes to a lot of other issues in this case. I think a jury could reasonably believe that they thought that Gary Pepper did not want the relatives in California to have this collection. They knew about it, and they knew that it wasn't for them to have, one way or another, either while Gary was alive or after his death, because they knew about it and did nothing about it for a long time. Now, that reminds me of the movie, one of my favorite movies, A Man for All Seasons, where Sir Thomas More is trying to defend himself against taking an oath, and he refuses to say what he believes, and he says silence betokens consent. And in this case, I believe silence betokens consent on several levels. One, the family knew about it and did nothing, therefore they knew it was not intended for them. They knew what Gary intended to do from the get-go out in this matter. Secondly, I think it showed they didn't really care about the collection, and this record is fraught with...
Well, if you're going to rely on what the third parties thought, what about Nancy? She says that she would have given it to them after Gary died. So if you're going to rely on what the families thought and what Nancy thought, that you might say, well, Nancy never thought it was a conditional gift because she thought she should turn it over even after Gary died.
Well, I think whatever conditions she thought were there were done by 1982 when she gave it to her sister, that they had not asked for it timely and they never wanted it, and therefore it did not... become
theirs. But I thought the death of Gary is the key time for a conditional gift, under your theory.
It is, Your Honor. I agree. 1980 is when it is. I think, these are conditions she imposed on herself, that, like the watch example you're giving me, she would have, out of the goodness of her heart, returned these things to her because she thought that might have been the right thing to do. But it doesn't speak to Gary's intention. I agree that...
Well, why would she give it to the family if she thought Gary's intent was that the family not have it and that she keep it after he died?
Because Nell Pepper was still alive, and she dies in 1982. I think Nancy felt that if it was needed for her support, she would somehow carry that as part of her obligations to what to do with this memorabilia. But by 1982, that is also gone, and she gave it to her sister, and that ends whatever conditions there might be here that either Nancy imposed on herself or were part of the conditions she thought
were
there.
What did the sister do with it? I know this isn't all that relevant, but why did she give it to the sister, and what did the sister do with the collection?
Her sister, Nancy, was a nurse by training, and she became a registered nurse. That was why Gary was in a nursing home when the people from California came to get her, because she put them there temporarily because she started a nursing program. She started then traveling as a traveling nurse and went all over the country working in various homes as a private nurse. So she had no way of keeping this memorabilia. Her sister is another devoted Elvis fan, and she said, Nancy said, will you take care of it? And Jenny said, the only way I'll do that is if it's mine. And she did. She preserved it all this time. She got it in good shape, put the stuff in acid-free paper so that the stuff would be properly maintained. So as the court, I think, ruled last time, 1982 is the key cutoff date here, that's when the collection occurred.
I understand. So the sister said only if it's mine, so there was a gift from
a transfer
Nancy.
Of it, yes. Yeah, a gift, I guess a gift.
But then the sister's gifting two-thirds to the
sister.
Siblings?
That's right.
I see.
Okay. I don't have much more to say about all this, except I would point the court's attention to the fact that all the things that Nancy did for Gary show, I think, their devotion to each other, and it makes Nancy the logical recipient of this collection. The first and primary is a devotion to Elvis Presley, and that, I think, is shown by how they both felt about Mr. Presley, and also both of them knew that the family in California did not care for Mr. Presley or what he stood for. Mr. Tate, I think, sums it up when he says in the deposition that he thought Nancy was full of crap. And I think that shows you the lack of attention, really, to the Elvis Presley thing. She was never paid for what she did. She helped him get a driver's license. She got him off medicine, got him into physical therapy, fed him properly. Everybody knew that Gary suffered from cerebral palsy and that he would get aspirational pneumonia if he wasn't fed slowly so that it wouldn't go down to his lungs. In the 18 months Nancy cared for him, that didn't happen. He died of aspirational pneumonia in California. She took Gary on trips. They wrote these Elvis fan columns together. They bought a house near Graceland to take care of him, let him be part of the action. But the ultimate of this argument is really what you'll find at the joint appendix at JA 445, and that is a note that Gary Pepper wrote to Nancy. You got to keep in mind that after we produced these notes, the plaintiffs believe that Gary couldn't write. But at page 445, there is this note that Gary wrote to Nancy. It says in part, "Thanks so much for what you have done for me and my dear mom this past year. I won't be able to repay you in a million years." And I think in his own way, what Gary did here, he tried to do for the person with cerebral palsy who, under those handicaps, left this memorabilia with Nancy and knew that he did not want the people in California to have it. That's shown, I think, by all the evidence in the record of their lack of care for it. The fact that I think they knew about these things and did nothing about it for 30 years shows they understood the intent, too. I agree with you, Judge Colleton. This is what Gary intended, not what relatives intended or what Nancy intended. But I think all we have is circumstantial evidence, and I think the jury was allowed to properly come to the conclusion that this was a conditional gift. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I would disagree that all with what Mr. Lyford's last statement, that all we have is circumstantial evidence, because I think we have direct evidence that Nancy said that Gary said to keep it, and she never understood that to be an ownership interest in the property. And to kind of go back to what Judge Colleton was asking earlier about whether or not a person with a watch would ever think that they have an ownership interest in it until somebody else asked for it back. But that's exactly what the restatement second says about it. It says that you have to deliver it, the personal property, to the donee with the manifest intention that the donee acquire an ownership interest in the property. And that's the key distinction that I was getting at between a bailment and a gift. The bailment does not transfer that ownership interest. And I know in my reply brief I cite Black's Law Dictionary definition of bailment, and it says in there that's the key distinction between a sale of property or a gift of property and a bailment. Sale and gift transfer the interest in it, whereas a bailment, you have no transfer of legal interest in it. And I think the best example that I could ever give about this is that somebody with a Picasso decides to loan a piece of artwork to a museum. And during that time period, but without giving it as a gift, it's important that it's as a loan. During that entire time period, the museum is acting as the caretaker and watching over it, and it's providing it so that it can be used by the public in viewing the Picasso. And if the actual owner of that Picasso passes away, the art museum doesn't just say, hey, great, we just got a free Picasso. That cannot be the case. They are acting as a bailee of the Picasso over the property. And that's the exact same situation that happened here. Nancy was using it and enjoying it, but she never obtained that necessary ownership interest in the property. And without that, there cannot be a conditional gift, and that's where the district court is incorrect, and we ask that this court reverse the district court's opinion. Thank you.
Well, very thoughtful argument. As you know, there's an old saying in the law that the facts are more important than the law. Is this a case that's a prime example of that?
I hope that's...
Well, I'm sure you'll say no.
Yeah.
No, the law is the law.
Without the law, Your Honor, we're in trouble, as what I view. So we need the law.
I wonder if Gary wrote any of these poignant notes to the California relatives.
There's nothing in the record about that, Your Honor.
Well, we thank both sides for the argument. I hope that this our ruling will take care of this case one way or another. Thank you.